SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two at the races, about 15 in. Jay Privman is with us. And Jay, I started to say Derby watch, and I had to pull up and say, wait, Crown watch as we hit Baltimore. Good morning.
Crab cake watch.
Crab cake watch. That, absolutely. Well, you were so enamored with Happy Pollo or Yummy Pollo.
Yummy Pollo.
Yummy Pollo. What's your crab cake of choice here in town?
Oh, Michael's, right by Timonium.
Sure,
Is always solid. But, yeah, no, nothing compares, though, to the pizza gluttony of Belmont Week at King Umberto's. But we're just getting warmed up on the Triple Crown Trail for that.
Exactly. Well, are we going to have three different, just like we have three different choices at Louisville, Baltimore, New York? What are your thoughts as we got the weather to deal with? We had a little bit of goofy controversy coming out of Sunday of Derby Week after the race. Some thoughts about tomorrow?
Well, I mean, we'll start with the goofy controversy. I addressed that on your show 10 days ago, and I think what I said then proved accurate, that I would come on here and do a mea culpa if it turned out to be more than a much ado about nothing. And So to me, it was much ado about nothing. Justify's trained very well here the few days I've seen him. I was out early this morning for his gallop and saw everybody else, obviously, get in their early training today because the track was open today just starting at 5 o'clock, and there was no break. Like yesterday, for instance, Justify went after the renovation break, but with no renovation break today, the intention always was for him to just go out as soon as possible to get as fresh a track as possible. And he went over it well. The thing I wrote in my race advance that's already online at drf.com and that I've been sort of talking about in other forums over the last couple of days is that, you know, even though he won on an off track at Churchill, there's going to be an off track, obviously, tomorrow because the weather forecast, as we know, is just for continuing rain today and tomorrow. But all off tracks are not created equal. And the off track that there was at the Derby was just one from a day-long rain, and it was a sloppy track, and there was a lot of standing water on top of firm footing underneath. It was your classic sort of sloppy or even wet-fast kind of track. But I think the potential for the track tomorrow is for it to be a different kind of off track, a heavier, muddier kind of surface, because you had racing on the main track yesterday. It'll be racing today, and obviously the Preakness being late on the card tomorrow, you'll have a full day of racing over the track tomorrow, combined with rain on all of those days, just makes for a surface that should be kind of a heavier one, a more challenging one to get through than the kind that you skip along on a sloppy track. Now, Justify might handle that just like he's handled everything else, but it just does raise an element of uncertainty to this race that, to me, is different from the Kentucky Derby. You know, that said, he's still obviously the best horse of this group and the horse to beat. I just think that there's the chance for, well, maybe he doesn't like the surface as much, and but even if he doesn't, maybe it won't matter anyway.
In the scenario that, you know, the gates open and everything, you know, everything goes without incident, how do you foresee this, Jay? We've talked a little bit about, you know, some of the speed and Quip drawing the rail, and, you know, feels certain to obviously to go. Diamond King's presence, how does Good Magic position himself? What do you foresee into the first turn here?
Well, I think Quip will have to leave from the inside. I'd be very surprised if Diamond King is aggressive early. I don't think that that's the intent of that camp to be part of the pace like that. Good Magic, I would be surprised to see him. I think that would take him out of his best element. I think the trip he got in the Derby is kind of his best chance. The horse that I think will be sent that you didn't mention, the Sporting Chance. I do think that Sporting Chance will leave aggressively and try and be part of the early pace. And so then you'll have Justify sitting off of potential Equip and Sporting Chance. But a lot of it's just going to depend on the break. I mean, if Justify outbreaks those two horses and they're not going fast, you could see just sort of the same kind of tactics that you saw with American Pharoah here 3 years ago, where, now granted, American Pharoah drew the rail, so you had to sort of commit to go from down there. But I mean this in the context of the camp of the favorite 3 years ago, American Pharoah, this time Justify, saying, you know, why mess around here and just
yes.
and just go with it. But again, your jocks are just going to have to play the break and see how you come out of there and then adjust accordingly. I'm sure Justify won't get, Mike Smith on Justify won't get into a head-to-head duel if somebody's going crazy fast, but we saw in the Kentucky Derby that he does have a high cruising speed and can go on with it when you consider that, you know, Promises Fulfilled was the horse he was sitting right off of, and he ended up 15th, and Justify went on the race after repelling first a bit from Bolt d'Oro on the far turn and then staving off Good Magic through the lane. Those are quality colts that made runs at him, and he still kept going. And he grew, and Justify, I think, grew quite favorably for the race tomorrow in post seven.
How do we bet the race, Jay?
Well, my whole strategy here, Steve, is I thought Bravazo ran a deceptively good race in the Derby. It was a horse coming essentially into the race off of a 10-week layoff because he came into the race off a six-week layoff, but his race prior was just an awful race in the Louisiana Derby. He was lugging out the whole race. So he basically had very little to do since the Risen Star in terms of prep. And I thought he was wide the whole race in the Derby and kept to his task. He emptied out a little bit late, but considering where he was on the racetrack the whole race, I thought he ran a credible race. And he's a strong horse, so I think he's going to be well-suited to coming back on 2 weeks' rest. So for me, it's just a cold punch of Justify over Bravazo. I'm not going to try and worry about the trifecta in an eight-horse field. I think I can get approximately 8-1 odds on Bravazo, you know, if you concede the race to Justify on Bravazo outrunning everybody else. So that's going to be my main play, is just a cold punch of Justify over Bravazo. But as a saver, just in case Justify doesn't fire for whatever reason and Bravazo's hanging up there at 15-20-1, I will have a saver win bet on Bravazo, because the last thing I want to have happen is for my opinion on Bravazo to outrun his odds to be good and not get anything out of it because the horse I think is the most likely winner for whatever reason doesn't fire. So that's my play. I mean, everybody else can, you know, I'm sure will approach it differently. It's certainly not as attractive a gambling race as the Derby was just because of the field size, but that's how I'm going to handle things. Cold punch 7-8 and a saber win bet on the 8.
Do you find that this was a surprising circumstance that we didn't get more challengers after, you know, after all we go through to get to Derby, or is this just not as perceived as important for the types of owners and connections that seek a Derby start?
Yeah, I think it's kind of the latter. The Derby's become a race that people want to run in, even if they have no chance. I mean, just because they don't want to say they ran in the race, they want to run in the race. So you just get fewer horses coming back. And, you know, and that, I think, combined with, I think people were rightly impressed with the way Justify ran in the Kentucky Derby, that adds up to a smaller field here, but you'd think that there'd be more horses who'd want to give this a go. Unfortunately, you have a lot of, or I don't know if unfortunately is the right word, but there's just a strategy these days for a lot of people. If they don't win the Derby, they'd just rather sit on their horse for 5 weeks and come into the Belmont fresh. And that's that approach that's been more successful than not over the last 15 years or so. So you can't really fault somebody if that's their approach. So I'm glad that at least there's a few horses out of the Derby that are going to take a shot here in the Preakness. I just, like you, I wish there'd be more who would try it. I think it speaks more to the pie-in-the-sky approach that there were to maybe a half dozen horses in this year's Derby of people who just wanted to be in the race just to say they were in the race, even though they clearly had absolutely no chance.
Some overall Pimlico Preakness thoughts, being here, the potential for this to end up at Laurel. What's your feeling? I've surveyed everybody.
Well, I mean, it seems like the Maryland Jockey Club's intent is to eventually move the race there. Now, I'm not as well versed in all the political machinations that would have to go on in the state of Maryland or with the city of Baltimore for that all to happen, but it's clear from the amount of number of race dates that those respective tracks have, and the capital improvements at one over the other as to what the intention is. The one thing that I don't think you can replicate at Laurel that you can do at Pimlico is the infield situation and the number of people that you get for that and the history of that. So it just seems that the intent of the Maryland Jockey Club and the Strada Group is to eventually move the race to Laurel. That's just, you know, reading the tea leaves, it just seems like that's what their intent is. But like I said, I just don't know enough about the political ramifications here as to is that something that's easily done, not easily done, something that's easily done in 2 years or 20 years. I don't know, but I it would not surprise me to see this race at Laurel in a short time horizon, just based on the way that it seems that they're approaching their capital improvement expenditures to the respective racetracks.
And finally, Jay, favorite Preakness over the years, the most memorable moment for you coming here?
Well, I mean, I've come to this race a long time. The best race I ever saw, unquestionably, was the Sunday Silence Easy Goer Preakness in 1989. That was just like a heavyweight fight with horses making one move and then the other one coming back at him, and then the great stretch long duel and with everything that was on the line in terms of, you know, the Easy Goer trying to avenge a Derby loss and Sunday Silence trying to keep a Triple Crown bit alive. And it was just that's the best Preakness that I've ever seen. But there have been, you know, a lot of great ones. It was just from a few years ago with American Pharoah. I mean, it was an unbelievable scene here that day, just because the deluge that went on just before that race was going to be run and then continued through. It was like end of days with the rain and the lightning in the area and everything. It was quite the scene. But the best race I've ever seen was the 89 Preakness. That was just a tremendous horse race.
Very much. And we look forward to however things unfold tomorrow. It's Baffert 4-for-4 with his Derby winners, and we'll see if he can make it 5-for-5. And you know, finally, I should also ask, because you've observed it from its origins, Jay, the chummy storyline of Dwayne Lucas and Bob Baffert, it's like Hope and Crosby now.
Yeah, no, they've had a good time with one another. It's not a new story. It's just
no.
Sort of got it played up almost to the point of, okay, we get it, you know, already. You know, I was thinking, you were asking me, sorry to just sort of backtrack here for 15 seconds, but, you know, the other race that really stands out to me is just a remarkable performance was what a Fleet Alex did when he won the Preakness.
Oh, sure.
Because it's just, I mean, he went from a near catastrophe to an incredible victory all in the space of less than a quarter mile. He almost got dropped by Snappy T at the top of the stretch, and still Jeremy Rose stayed on him, and the Fleet Alex regathered himself and got, not only finished the race, but won the race. That was just an incredible achievement. So that one really stands out of the ones that I've seen over the years here.
Absolutely, and it went on in another mammoth effort at Belmont, and actually tomorrow, being a 19th, the Point Givens effort in 2001, and that one after the bitter disappointment in the Derby, and proceeds to put on a show here and then even a bigger show at Belmont. I hope that one stays with me. And, of course, Baffert, four straight Triple Crown wins, Point Given, and then into War Emblem the next year. Today, the anniversary of War Emblem's win in 2002. Jay Bribman, so much fun. You and Marty, Dave Grenig, Nicole Russo, Jim Dunleavy, the DRF team in full force here at Old Hilltop. And look forward to this afternoon and tomorrow. And as always, appreciative.
No, thank you, Steve, very much.
Jay Pribman, everybody. DRF Pribman, DRF Live, and the whole team is on everything here. And Nicole, actually, she'll be encamped because tomorrow, after tomorrow, Sunday, the third day of the Bree Show at Timonium, and then she's going to cover the sale on Monday and Tuesday. And a lot of the horsemen from all over the country will stay right here in the Maryland community and in the environs. Timonium just 15, 18 minutes away. And we're 90 minutes from filling out our five-day visit to Old Hilltop. And so much, I love coming here. And I always get to this point as we take a break. Nick Tamaro joining us next. But we get to this point, and I'm just so filled with the appreciation of the game's majesty and history. And just because this building and the area is rough around the edges, it doesn't take away from the charm and from the people that wrote the history and the animals that it's all built around. Let's take a timeout. Nick is going to join us next, and much more. We've got, I told you, Vance Hansen. He's around the corner. He's going to sit here live, and we'll reach out to Scully and DeRosa back in Kentucky. Hammer as well, of course, in hour three. And theracingbiz.com, Nick Hahn and Frank Vespi as well. Very local. Of course, Nick, longtime Virginia correspondent, and Frank, who's now the head of the Maryland racing media team. I guess I can't call that race the Scheinman anymore. I gotta call it the Vespi. Back after this, we'll talk to Nick, get some handicapping opinion, mostly about Saturday, maybe get a little Pimlico special, maybe the most tricky. And actually, I found the Black-Eyed Susan I ended up cross-eyed at one point with it. We'll see. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
He's got a long way to go to come and get Army Mule, who's pulling away by 5.
2 years ago, Pennsylvania bred Army Mule was purchased at the Fasig Tipton Mid-Atlantic sale at Timonium. Now he's a grade one winner.
Army Mule, ultra impressive in the Cartery flew home.
There'll be more than 30 Pennsylvania breds at the Fasig Tipton 2-year-olds in training sale, May 21st and 22nd at Timonium, Maryland. Breeding and racing in Pennsylvania, it's a winner.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hello, friend. Keep on staying. Let's see what's telling everyone in town. Oh, the love that teaches far. I'm a human. Always lazy slave.
We're back at the races, back at Pimlico. Hi-ho. And just put out the links to the changes, and it not so terrible. Races 2, 6, and 8 are off the turf. The 8th, part of the pick 5 and the start of the pick 4, but it actually holds together pretty well, and you end up with 9 that are going to stay in the race on the main track. And so other than that, I will mention actually the turf, the McKay, the turf sprint, the 4 outside horses all came out, including Hoagie. Hoagie and Pool Winner, Triple Burner, and Dabini, actually. The Kathleen DeMassey, I thought was a little interesting as a price underneath, but that leaves us with some fairly obvious horses. Imprimus from Joe Orsino, the wonderful Mary Epler with Oak Bluffs, Rocket Heat, I'm sure some people, if you've got opinions elsewhere in the sequence, you might end up pushing the all button in there if you can afford it. We're going to see what Nick Tamara wants to do, because we've got important stakes on either side of that turf sprint, the Pimlico Special and the Black Eyed Susan. And, of course, word came out that Linda Rice was forced to scratch Midnight Disguise with a little bit of a barking dog. And Tam, 1215, Nick Tamaro joins us from California. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. And you're getting ready for the big challenge. And we talked to Pete, who was delayed on Wednesday or Tuesday, wanted to get out there. But is he safely arrived?
He has arrived, yeah. I think he's here and ready to roll. And I came in last night. And so, yeah, we're all ready for the inaugural Swornatal Kinchin Showdown.
Yeah. Well, I'll leave you to dispatch the two of them and
I have to go to dinner with them tonight. How bad is that?
Well, that means you got to deal with Pete with his Toastmaster duties. he's like a human satellite around the table, pouring wine.
No doubt about it.
Yes. Well, let's dive in, and I don't want to spend too much time on Friday, just because a lot of people will listen later to the archives and so forth, and they want to hear about Saturday. But that said, there's two interesting graded stakes that make up Pimlico Special Black Eyed Susan Day. There's also the Black Eyed Susan Preakness double. And the Pimlico Special, it's an interesting group. And sure feels like there's a lot of horses that want to be on or near the lead.
It does, yeah. And you know, this is a race that we're, I think we're all hoping kind of gets back to its prominence. And it's nice to see it on the calendar. It's a good running for what it is right now. It's not necessarily the Grade 1 showdown that it used to be, but it brings a useful group together. And a horse like Something Awesome has really, really gotten his act together at once and showed something that I think I was surprised by, which was that he is just as effective going long as he was going shorter. And he's clearly not going to be hurt by a wet surface. He also should be greatly aided by a hot pace. So it goes without saying that the Charlestown Classic field kind of came together late last time, and that obviously helped a horse coming from off of it. A Fleet Willie probably ran the best race, if you want to put it that way, and now gets himself into a scenario where he has to deal with some combination of hedge fund and one-liner. It'll be really interesting to see how those two horses respectively are ridden, given that they have somewhat they don't really have complementary styles. And so I'm imagining that one-liner is going to be taken a little bit off the pace, and I imagine also that Luis Saez will try to get him outside, because it was very, very obvious that he was extremely uncomfortable being on the rail last time at Keeneland. And when he got outside, he just made a totally new move. But that was December 7 and seam rep. So this is a much, much better field, and he will definitely have to step his game up. I think the key in terms of betting in this race is allowing a horse like Hedge Fund to beat you, because he's kind of beaten up on some of the weaker horses that he's faced recently, and I think this is a tougher group. And I'll try and squeeze Something Awesome in there at what should be a little bit of a price. I'll probably try and use Untrapped as well. I don't know if Untrapped, I don't know what his best distance is. I don't know if he really prefers a wet track, but I do know that you can't hold the Razorback against him, given that the inside was the place to be, and he was never anywhere near it. So hopefully he can get a decent enough trip being outside, and he'll at least spice up some of the exotics being 8 or 10 to 1.
Yeah, I didn't know what to do with Untrapped. I kept going around and around. The price that I thought would come calling late is Rated R Superstar.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I was absolutely astounded by his Ben Ally, and maybe I had held it against him that he got such a huge pace set up the time before. I happened to be at Oakland the day he ran in late March, and he got a huge setup and never really put a charge into Shotgun Cowboy at all. And so my perspective on Rated R Superstar has always been that he would be more effective around one turn. But I guess, you know, in typical Kenny McPeak fashion, he's made him into a loping one-run router that should, again, if you believe it's going to be a strong pace, then he's going to be the kind of horse that you want to try, because that was a nice prolonged move where he reeled in Chip Leader rather easily. I do think that this field is a little bit better, but he's a horse that's shown some talent. And we'd be remiss in talking about this race and not mentioning Irish Warcry, who's the morning line favorite. I don't think he's going to go off favorite in this race, but if he does, then I think that'll present some value elsewhere, because Irish Warcry's best performances have been when he's had some level of control over the race. And from the inside and in a hotly contested pace, it doesn't feel as if he's getting that trip. So I want to see Irish Warcry get back to the horse that we really respected along the Derby trail last year before I believe that he's ready for any kind of graded stakes competition amongst older horses.
Yeah, and the other part of this is, which we should address, given the washout conditions that have, you know, really prevailed here for days now, the inside is typically very heavy and soupy as well. So the going down inside, in fact, you saw it yesterday with riders, you know, kind of staying well off the rail and looking for better footing in the two path and further out. Talk about the Black Eyed Susan before we head over into Saturday.
Yeah, you and I had kind of a funny conversation about this race, given that it's kind of the JV of the 3-year-old filly ranks, given that everybody really went forward 2 weeks ago. But, you know, it still brings an intriguing group together. I'm interested in seeing if Red Ruby is going to bounce back. Her Honey Bee was disappointing. I don't know if she's capable of bouncing back. I do think her best efforts, especially given that Martha Washington was in the slot, make her a major contender. Sarah Street is the horse to beat based on her last race, but I know that all of us collectively have had this uneasy feeling about the Gazelle, and My Miss Lily didn't do anything in the Oaks, which, of course, is an extremely tough objective. but didn't do anything to convince me that that race was believable. So I wonder if there's going to be a move forward from her, or at least a similar type of performance. I thought that the race Good One Honey ran last time at Laurel was sensational. It was a very, very strong pace. It was the epitome of what all of us pseudo wise guys whine about when it comes to riding speed horses, where Steve Hamilton just absolutely put everybody on the chase and he ran them off their feet. And this horse was extremely impressive. Didn't really look necessarily in her debut like a horse that would struggle with two turns, and clearly did not. Probably the second best effort, but easily the most interesting performance in the race came from Indy Union, who seems to be a kind of an oddball that maybe in somewhat similar fashion to One Liner needs to be outside to run her best. But I remember, and I'll get a shameless red board in, that I had bet a Good One Honey Indy Union Exacta, and Indy Union lost contact on the turn. So of course I was cursing. And then all of a sudden they took the camera away and focused on Good One Honey. And here came this blur on the outside to get up for second. So that being said, I think Indy Union probably benefits from this being a mile and an eighth. And the hope, I think, if you're backing her, is that some combination of the two Dale Roman horses show some speed along with Good One Honey and Sarah Street. And then all of a sudden you might be talking about this big lumbering filly on the outside making up ground late. And that might be exactly the trip that she needs. She's going to be a good enough price too. So I'll certainly throw some money her way.
I like it. So Good One Honey, Sarah Street, I eventually ended up foregoing completely.
I don't blame you. You know, I wonder if that race is believable. You know, it was so hard to take it at face value. It was so hard to believe that they came home fast with three horses sort of knocking heads. It was hard to believe that could be a 90 plus buyer figure in a race where the favorite was a total no show. And nothing has happened that's made anybody say, yeah, that's it's believable. Like, you know, no, take it to the bank. That was a good race. That was an opportunity for some lightly raced 3-year-old fillies to really take a step forward. So I think you have to be critical of Sarah Street until it ends up happening.
Fair enough. Let's turn to Saturday. And, you know, other than, I suppose, the Gallarette and the Dixie, we'll see about, you know, the Murphy, which is a big issue because of the cross entries between it and the Sir Barton, although Gary Capuano has said that his horses are coming out of the Sir Barton, and Lacey Gaudette is also uncertain with takedown. So maybe those races we wait and see until those fields come together. In the meantime, we got the good sprints, we got the two turf races, and we got the feature. Let's start with the feature, and how do you approach this? We've been talking about the application of bankroll, Nick, for about 10 days, about not being afraid to heavy up and narrow down and focus. How do you bet this race tomorrow?
I think what you're trying to do in the Preakness is you're either basically one-punching some type of intra-race exotic where you're playing Justify over the horses that you think make sense underneath, or you're trying to be you're doing something similar to that, but you're trying to be clever and getting a bit of a price in there. And the horse that I keep coming back to in terms of whether he can make an impact at a decent price is Bravazo. Because I do feel as if, and I thought that if anybody out there can dial up the podcast of Andy Serling and David Aragona going over all the trips in the Derby, I thought that both of them made a really good point on Bravazo, which is that of everybody in that race, and given that it was his first opportunity over it, I feel as if the slot moved him up. And so what you're banking on, if you believe that, is that the slop once again is going to move him up. It's not going to be an equalizer for him to get to the level of a horse like Justify. Let's be honest, there's not a 3-year-old on the face of this earth that's at the level of Justify on a dirt surface. And he's clearly not hurt at all by a wet surface. But if Bravazo moves up enough on a wet track and is going to get that sort of decent outside chasing type of trip when Justify and anybody who wants to go on a suicide mission to the lead does so early on, then he's probably one that can just be kind of lumbering along to get a slice of it shortly thereafter. And he's going to be a good enough price, I think. And so what I'm looking at doing is something that uses Justify over a horse like Lone Sailor and Bravazo, and then try and build out a superfecta underneath that, and some trifectas as well. And so clearly what the approach that I'm taking is that I'm going to try and beat Good Magic in the number. And I'm going to assume that Good Magic really laid himself down in the Kentucky Derby, and the quick return is going to be a little too difficult for him. I know that there's an encouraging element to Chad Brown bringing the horse back so quickly. It is a little bit of a Bobby Frankel type of move, and we've seen Chad have a lot of success doing this. But I feel like the likelier scenario between the two favorites is that Good Magic takes a step back and Justify just continues to prove that he's too much for these horses. So I'll probably, in an effort to avoid not making enough money, should Good Magic run third behind a Justify Lone Sailor or Justify Bravazo Exacta, I'll have those Exactas as well, because I do think, and we've seen the Preakness over the years, where one decent priced horse slides into the number and you really, those right. exotics explode, and the scenario you come up with is American Pharoah over Tale of Earth.
Well, agreed. And there's been a candidate like that repeatedly. And Bravazo, having had the Derby in the PPs that people will see, and all the comparisons being made to Oxbow, from that standpoint, I've been trying to figure out how to use Tenfold productively, because I think he benefits from exotic ignorance and is some of the value that you might want. And of course, Lone Sailor getting plenty of love, but he's an obvious, come running late for minor award candidate.
Well, he's the only real closer in the race.
Right.
So, I mean, if you truly believe that this is a race that's going to be run at any type of decent early pace, which, usually the Preakness is, and barring track condition, we can't make a prediction on what the fractions are going to look like, but I will say that IRAD is an incredibly good fit for Lone Sailor. I think the plan is going to be very, very simple, which is going to be that he's going to eat a lot of dirt in the opening half mile. He's probably going to be well detached from the rest of the field, and he might just be the one that's picking off some of those tiring horses in the final half mile. And you look at the horses that he has to beat for an underneath slot, and if I told you, do you think it's crazy for Lone Sailor to have to beat Quip and Diamond King and Tenfold? I mean, you'd probably say yes to all three. So that was kind of my angle on liking him. And it would be nice, obviously, if his odds were to drift up, especially off the 15-1 morning line. I think they will, because in all likelihood, Justify is going to go off somewhere around 1-5. So, if that ends up being what could a Justify over Lone Sailor Exacta pay, I mean, if it's in the neighborhood of $25 to $30, I'll take 12-1 on a 1-5 over 20-1 shot.
How? Let me ask you a question. You talked about these kinds of Exacta presses and punches. How will you bet them? What will be the don't include the tournament portion of the equation, but if you weren't involved in the challenge, what increment would you press these combinations?
Given that the likelihood that they'll be around the same price, I'd probably play Justify over Lone Sailor and Bravazo equally. So you figure, let's say you're going to make a $200 investment in the race. I would spend $100 playing Justify over both Lone Sailor and Bravazo, and then I would play trifectas, Justify over Lone Sailor and Bravazo, over Lone Sailor, Sporting Chance, Good Magic, Tenfold, and Bravazo, and then I would reverse those in second and third with the other $100 or so, and the real score would be if somehow it comes in Justify over Bravazo and Lone Sailor, because then you'd hit the Exacta and the try.
Right.
So that would be the main goal, and basically what a Justify over Bravazo over Good Magic trifecta would be is a way for you to make a slight profit on the trifecta, but really make money on the Exacta.
There you go. And this is what we've been angling for all week. And I guess the one other follow up question to that, Nick, which I've really tried to draw people out, is that point in a development curve as a horse player of moving from the scattershot shotgun approach, small increment, to start calling $10 whatevers and $20 whatevers. And it's a very hard mental leap for a lot of players, and they get afraid to pull the trigger, and they end up saying afterward, even if they hit, why didn't I, I bet a $5 exact, a $5 try. Why didn't I had the opinion right? What was holding me back from betting it for $20?
Yeah, you know, and to liken it, to make a sports analogy, and obviously for me to get a shameless plug in on my hometown team, but like, look at how the Houston Rockets have overtaken the NBA. You know, it's not, and not that they've overtaken it, obviously they're still an underdog to win their series, but, you know, the whole mentality of, and using the analytics to determine that if you take a higher percentage of three-point shots, you take what's close to the basket and what's behind the three-point line and some interchangeable combination of the two, even though you're going to win less frequently making these focused, heavier bets, you're going to make more when you do. And so that's really the place that you have to get yourself to. And it was a long road for me to get to a point where I realized that, especially when it comes to contest play, which is obviously a larger conversation, but when it comes to contest play, you don't win hitting $1 and $2 trifectas. You win hitting $10 and $15 trifectas or $2 and $3 and $400 exactas. So that's where you have to narrow yourself down to something, and you have to be willing to say, hey, you know, I'm going to bet my opinion, and if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but I'll move on to the next opportunity where I might be able to take a similar approach and make some money.
Very good. I appreciate it. That's always a valuable portion, because we can handicap. I said this last night with the Stats Race Lens program we did. You can handicap this till the cows come home. If you do not utilize the right opinion or being in position to be right, if you don't leverage it properly with the wager structure and ideally with the increment, it's unsatisfying. And you can learn from it, and hopefully you build off of it, but ideally it all comes together. Yes, and you get it all. Yes. Let's talk about the two turf races. And I was out on the grass course Wednesday. It was firm then. I'm sure they're going to probably get it to yielding or soft, but we were that way last year too. And under that circumstance, World Approval and Cambodia were able to win. They're both back this year for Mark Cassie and Mrs. Weber, and for Proctor when it comes to Cambodia. Some thoughts on the two turf standards.
You know, it's a tough scenario with World Approval, because you're in a situation where, you know, he came into this race last year off of an easy win against a bad field, and you didn't really have any doubt about whether he was still himself. But I mean, having been at Santa Anita, and I think we watched the race together, but yep. When he ran in the kill row, he was bad, you know. And then when the objective shortly thereafter was a Makers 46, and he was a little bit too far behind schedule to make that, he also missed a workout in between those two when that race was supposed to be. You get a little nervous about what kind of condition he's in. Now, that being said, he's supposed to beat these horses. But he was also supposed to beat Bowie's Hero and Next Shares last time. The advantage that he has is that the pace scenario should work very favorably. This feels like a turf course that probably will not enable many to quicken. But it is worth saying that if you're looking for alternatives, there are two horses in this race that have run races on very boggy turf courses that you have to be aware of. Now, one was Frostmourne as a two-year-old when he won the Awad back in October of 2016, but he really crushed that field, and that was a turf course that had taken a typical late autumn Belmont turf course that had taken on a lot of rain and just doesn't dry out because of the weather. And the other one is Just Howard, who, granted, it was against much, much weaker competition last year at Laurel, but he won the find over a total bog. And he's now coming back off a layoff. This is a very sneaky Grand Motion type of horse that I think you probably want to find a way to fit into the number a little bit. I'm not saying that you should completely concede the race to World Approval, but given the way the pace should unfold in here, the fact that Johnny V will definitely have him close to it, and that he might end up just dictating terms to this field over a kind of a spongy turf course that he certainly likes, he looks to be in the driver's seat. And I think any multi-race plays that go through here, even though you have to have some level of concern about his last effort, I do think World Approval looms a very, very likely winner.
Gallarette, one of my all-time favorites, and a heroine versus the boys as many times as she ran against the girls.
Yeah, and you know, this is a good field again, and Cambodia was victorious over similar kind of turf course, as you alluded to, probably going to be a little bit wetter this time around. Elysia's World is a funny horse, you know, and I remember arguing on Twitter with a couple of people after she lost the Forever Together last year, and I think somebody called her a money burner, which isn't altogether unfair. But I'll challenge anybody to find me a horse that had more things go against her last year than Elysia's World did. And some of it is self-inflicted, but the majority of it was traffic, pace, wide trips, you know, it was always something. And she finally put it together, beating an average field in the Suwannee River, but a field that really is on par with this one. The concern that you have with Cambodia is that Cambodia and the Jenny Wiley got herself into a great position halfway through that race, and she had absolutely nothing when the running started. So perhaps she needed her last race. She did move forward quite a bit off the Dahlia last year into the Gallarette. I don't think you could make any kind of multi-race play and exclude Cambodia, but I do think you want some protection for both Cambodia and Elysia's World. And for me, that's going to come with Stallion Aris, who I think probably faced Uni and 55 are both horses who would be favored in this race, who she ran against in the Plenty of Grace. And she set a solid pace, grudgingly gave way. You know, a lot of wet turf courses are conducive to horses getting the lead, who can dictate terms to everybody else and just have that advantage and quicken first when nobody really is able to really kick in the final half mile or so. And barring special event being ridden very aggressively to get to the lead, I think the Stallion Aris should find herself in a pretty good spot. And if she can dictate the tempo, then she certainly has an upset chance.
Let's talk about the two big sprint races. We got the Maryland Sprint. We've got the Chick Lang. And the Chick for the boys, three-year-olds. We don't know about Mitol. He's going to be a game-time decision because of the wet conditions. We'll see what Asmussen ultimately does. And when it comes to the Maryland Sprint, it's interesting. We don't have the usual suspects. Long Haul Bay is around, but there's a lot of new faces on the sprint front, and Lewis Field caught my eye.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting horses in here. Lewis Field has certainly stepped his game up, and kind of a local connection there. A horse that also is versatile enough to not really need the lead. You have an interesting horse like Switzerland, who had always shown ability and then kind of gotten in his own way a lot as well. I think the pace is going to be pretty strong between Red Dragon Tattoo and Lackey being in the race. I think what I ultimately found was that I wanted horses that either had potential to move forward, which I still think Long Haul Bay has potential to move forward. I thought his last race was very, very good. I think that 6 furlongs probably is exactly what he wants. But boy, Fellowship is in the first realistic spot he's had in a while. The Stymie was just a little too much for him going a mile, and obviously the Carter was way too much. So here's a horse that is going to get a pace in front of him. I think he's going to be moving late. He's not hurt at all by a wet track. And I think if you were to say, if Fellowship runs a race similar to what he did in the General George, I think at worst he's in the trifecta, if not contending for the win. And assuming that the pace is going to be strong, the other horse that I wanted to try was Heartwood, who 2 starts back got a big pace in front of him and was able to gather everybody in at Keeneland, going 6 furlongs on a sloppy track. Obviously, conditions going to be pretty similar to that this time around. And that was a strong, strong pace in the race that McCracken won in his comeback, and Heartwood was just a little bit too close to that. So even though it's a quick return, it's a good cutback, and this is a horse that's most effective at 6 furlongs.
And I'm overlapping, actually, with Long Haul Bay, Lewis Field, Fellowship, and Heartwood myself. So in some harmony in here. Talk about the three-year-olds. If Mitoli runs, can he be beat? And if he doesn't, where do we lean?
You know, Matoli's kind of one of those funny horses, and if you're a Timeform US user, you're probably looking for a good opportunity to bet against Mitoli, because even though he's been very impressive in his last 2 starts, he's had an advantage of slow paces both times, at least according to the way they compute their pace figures. And then you have a horse like Curly's Rocket, who was really good last time, stalking what at least Timeform US considered to be a very, very strong pace. So between the sloppy track, where, you know, maybe Mitoli wasn't quite as good on a sloppy track as he's been on a dry one, and the fact that he might be forced along a little bit more in the early stages of this race, it becomes a situation where you're willing to try and bet against him. There's no question that if he runs his last race, he's going to win this race for fun. If he runs his last race, then they might as well point for the King's Bishop and assume that he's the best three-year-old sprinter by a mile. I want to try a couple of horses that'll be prices as alternatives, and the rail is not ideal, but the price is going to be good. And I'm such a sucker for cutbacks that I have to bet still having fun. This is a horse that I think proved two back, that he really didn't want to go long when he just kind of, but he did have enough trouble so that he deserved to get another shot going 2 turns. He's just not a 2-turn horse. He's a 1-turn horse. What you're hoping for is that there's a little bit of chaos on the front end, and that if the inside is not the place to be, that Sheldon Russell can get him outside. Because I think you want to try, you want to at least pay some respect to horses that are going to be making up ground late in here. And the two that I think that are most trustworthy are still having fun in Soutache, and they're both going to be good prices.
Soutache, the 9-2 I like, and you bring up a great point about still having fun, who we talked about earlier in the winter with Tim Keefe, and you're right about getting back. The one problem here is down inside, and we'll have to monitor, you know, where things go in terms of, you know, the inside, and not just frankly for the main track, but on the grass course as well, as we've discussed, and we had this issue in Kentucky. You get down along hedgerows and the inside of turf courses, even though the temporary rails have protected a good portion, you know, of the inside, you still, turf courses drain down that way too. So you're looking for the crown. And in fact, last year, I can think about world approval, you know, and being right out there about the 3.5 path, you know, on the firm berm through the middle. This is very similar to, in fact, I meant to bring this up with Migliori earlier. He and Robbie Davis, the greatest riders in New York history, on the wagon wheel path where the two tractor tires would press down, and on a sloppy track, it would be the best footing. And, you know, that's something to watch for here as well, and see where, you know, what path you'll see guys come out, you know, three path, five path, you know, where that packed down dirt is, and the horses can get a good grip. The same thing is true on the grass course. That pretty much runs us, I think. That turf sprint is going to be important, the very one. And I think they'll do everything, obviously, to keep it on. But any thoughts in here? I came up with nothing original, really, just talking Girls Know Best and Chantelaine.
I mean, it feels like this turf course by this point could look like old Candlestick Park when they would play January football games. And remember the one year they thought they were going to have to move the game. But, yeah, I mean, field stays intact. I think that it does look like it's going to be pretty formful. If Victoria's Fire is able to push Girls Know Best enough, then that could set things up for somebody coming from a little bit off of it. And I think the horse that you sort of naturally lean to is Smiling Causeway. I also think that Just Talking is very dangerous, given that while she did do her best running on the lead last time, that's not a necessity by any means. Y'all actually also have Keep Your Distance, who can force this pace along as well. So, I you know, the hope obviously is that it'll stay on. I know that they'll do everything they can in order to keep it on for gambling purposes, but we'll certainly keep it safe. And I would certainly use those. I'd probably throw in Pretty Perfection. I know she hasn't been quite as impressive lately, but had really nothing go her way last time. And I think Jose Ortiz taking over is always a good thing. So she should be a bit of a price, and maybe it's a horse that's going to offer value.
Well, we always get value when we get the insights from Nick Tamaro. And Tam, 2 M's, 1215 on Twitter. Best of luck this weekend, Nick. The contest, we'll be watching all the media information and seeing how everybody is faring. Should be a lot of fun, and could be something really important going forward, bringing new players in and a way to merchandise the game and horseplay with the TV pilot. So have fun. Get yourself a starring role. We want you headlining.
You know, I would have it no other way.
I love it. I appreciate
it. More characters.
No, exactly. And you know, you fit the bill.
Hey, wherever I can.
Nick Tamaro, everybody. Let's take a break. Just past the top of the hour. I can hear the strains of the national anthem, I think, as we're not far from the start of race day here. If we were at Churchill, they've been racing, we'd be on the third race already. But here we'll start at 11:30. Tomorrow we start at 10:30, Saturday. Take a timeout. I've got to go get Vance Hansen, and we are going to have Ed and or Scully and get their opinions. We've got to check in with Hammer. See if his ears are still ringing from the U2 concert the other night. It looked like he was in the second row. It looked like he was on stage. back to Pimlico for our last 50 minutes, give or take, of Preakness Week on top. And tell you what, weather is absolutely holding on. Skies are, you know, I mean, cloudy, but it's bright right now. Not so bad. And knock on wood, keep it like this, be okay. Only has to make it another, you know, 35 hours. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire. Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF past performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
He's got a long way to go to come and get Army Mule, who's pulling away by 5.
2 years ago, Pennsylvania bred Army Mule was purchased at the Fasig Tipton Mid-Atlantic sale at Timonium. Now he's a Grade 1 winner.
Army Mule, ultra impressive in the Cartery flew home.
There'll be more than 30 Pennsylvania breds at the Fasig Tipton 2-year-olds in training sale, May 21st and 22nd at Timonium, Maryland. Breeding and racing in Pennsylvania, it's a winner.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got 2 sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.